Let me start off, first of all, asking about the special effort against scams against seniors. Are we seeing an increase in that now? If so, why? Is it the economy? Is it the senior boom? More people are joining the ranks of seniors. Is it just an increase in crime? What is it that you think may be driving this?
Well, let me give you some perspective. So when I first became the Attorney General, we were receiving in the office, on average, 22,000 consumer fraud complaints a year. Over the years, and this coincides exactly with the collapse of our economy, we're now seeing 32,000 consumer fraud complaints filed a year. And so that's about a 10,000 a year increase in consumer fraud complaints. I do believe it is in large part because of what has happened with our national economy. And so I presume that there are a number of individuals who cannot make money legitimately that have unfortunately chosen to make money illegitimately. And they oftentimes decide to prey on seniors because seniors are at home. Seniors answer their phone. They've got more time to talk on their phone. And so the con artists, who are very charming and very convincing sometimes, really do target seniors intentionally. And one of the most common scams that we're seeing right now involves Medicare. And it is because of the health care reform that's passed that they're able to call people, and they have, you know, a whole bunch of iterations of this, but it can be, you need to re-register for Medicare. You need to give us your Social Security number that we have to verify so that we can ensure that you're re-enrolled, or that you receive a new card, or that you receive your $250 rebate check that you're now entitled to as part of Medicare Part D, the prescription drug coverage for people who fall into the donut hole. So that's a very common scam we see right now.
Well, is it because of it, it's such a complicated system that a senior has to take care of Medicare and Part B and Part D and worrying about the donut hole and all that? Is it the complexity of the system itself that may be bringing more people who could prey on seniors?
It is absolutely because there is confusion out there, and it is a complex system. But here's another aspect that is very disconcerting. A lot of the people who are running these scams are spoofing their phone numbers. So, a number of years ago, many of us got caller ID, this, you know, fabulous feature where when somebody calls your phone, their number comes up, their name comes up, you know who's calling, you can choose to take the call if it's from your mom, but you don't have to take the call if it's from a telemarketer. The scam for many people is that the number that comes up, the name that comes up, says Social Security Administration. And so when you see that and you're a senior, you have no reason to believe that that's not accurate. And so when they get on the phone with you and say, hi, I'm calling from the federal government, as you've probably seen, there's a new health care reform that's been passed. In order for us to make sure that you still qualify to re-enroll you, whatever they say, we need to verify your birth date. We need to verify your Social Security number. And sometimes people obviously aren't thinking, oh, federal government verifying my Social Security number? Don't you already know my Social Security number? So people are lured in. They're obviously concerned because they don't want to lose their medical coverage. And so they give this information away. Ultimately, it's an identity theft scam. Ultimately, some people have also end up losing direct money out of their bank accounts because they're oftentimes asking for bank account routing information as well.
These are also evading the telemarketer rule that, you know, people that signed up and wanted to block telemarketers from their phones. Have they found a way to go around that? And is that system effective anymore?
Well, when somebody spoofs the phone number, it's not legal in that regard for them to go around that way. But then the question is, how do we track them down? And so if the senior chooses to call the Attorney General's office, chooses to call law enforcement, and what are they going to give them? They're basically going to say, well, I got a call, and it said Social Security Administration, and then that will require an investigation, you know, to be aided by the phone company to go into those records. So it's very complicated to actually do these investigations, and that's one of the reasons that we've been making the effort to go and talk to seniors wherever we can to alert them to these new scams that we're seeing and hopefully prevent them from falling victim to these scams. Because quite honestly, for many people, once you lose your money, once you've given away your personal information, it's going to be tough for us to get your money back. And it's going to take a lot of time for us to reestablish your good name and your credit if you're a victim of identity theft.
One other reason that you mentioned that seniors have been a target is that they have large pools of money. They have pensions and all that they're managing. Why are they preying on those besides the fact that there's a lot of money? Is there worry about the fate of those pension funds in the problems that the stock market has had over the years. Is that something that that fraud artists have been preying on?
Well, I certainly think they're obviously looking for people that have some resources, and they're trying to find convincing ways to extract your money from you. And while some people may have pensions, may have large sums of money, most seniors are living on limited or fixed incomes, and that's the concern that I have. So, you know, if somebody who is still in the job market is defrauded, that's terrible, but they have a way to recoup the money that they lose. For the most part, if you are retired, if you're a senior citizen, you don't necessarily have a way to recoup that money. And let me give you the worst scam that we see, and it is also one of the most prevalent, the grandparent scam. So this is very, very typical. In fact, everywhere that I have trained seniors, I have somebody come up to me saying that they almost fell prey to this or that they did receive a call. Here's what it is. You get a call, and they tell you that your granddaughter or your grandson is in jail, and you need to send them. The lowest amount I've heard is $3,500. The highest amount I've heard is $25,000 to bail them out. I have learned something about grandparents now that I have young daughters. They will do anything. They will do anything for their grandchildren. And so this has been an extraordinarily effective scam. Almost everywhere I go, as I said, somebody tells me that they almost fell victim. I was in Springfield not long ago. A woman came up to me after the training. She was in line at the bank about to withdraw $25,000, but for the fact that her phone rang and it happened to be her granddaughter, she wouldn't have known it was a scam. She said, "Lisa, I didn't even think of calling her parents. I heard that she was in jail. I wanted to help. So please
beware." But separate yourself from that, and it seems like it seems obvious. You don't think about that when you're blindsided by it, I guess.
Well, it seems obvious, but that is a very emotional con. And so I always say to people, regardless of their age, don't abandon your common sense, and don't be taken in by these emotional pleas for money, whatever the con is going to be. So please, instead, you know, if you have a question, a concern, even if it sounds like something that you should do, we see a lot of this in the aftermath of natural disasters, whether it's the oil spill in the Gulf, whether it's an earthquake in Haiti or anywhere else around the world, people calling you, asking you for your credit card number, asking you for your bank account routing number. Don't give that information away. Don't, you know, get overly emotional and be taken in by that. Don't abandon your common sense. And please call the Attorney General's office, call local law enforcement, call the Better Business Bureau. We can give you the benefit of the information that we have about whether this is legit, whether it's not, what you should do if you do want to be helpful in those circumstances, and how to do so safely.
You're soon going to be joined by another agency that watches out for things like that, although not necessarily. With the financial regulation bill that's passed, the new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is coming up. What is that agency supposed to do? How is it going to mesh with AG's offices in individual states? Who's going to decide? What do you govern? What does the federal government govern? And how will it change?
Well, I actually think this Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is very exciting. So in large part, the economic crisis that all of us are suffering from was caused because there weren't basic protections in place for consumers. And so I think there are a lot of people who either don't understand or it's just never been explained to them what's really at the heart of the catastrophe that we've been facing. And I can tell you, because we've seen it wash up on the shores of the Attorney General's office for years, it was subprime predatory lending. Basically, lenders putting people into loans that they didn't understand, they couldn't afford, and oftentimes could not get out of. Ultimately, they couldn't get out of them, and now many people are in foreclosure. We have done investigations of some of the mortgage giants in this country, and we have filed numerous lawsuits. We've entered into some very significant settlements with Countrywide. We have an ongoing lawsuit against them for discrimination in lending, as well as Wells Fargo. But what we have consistently seen is that lenders were incentivized to put people into loans that were very high cost, that were inappropriate, and that that they should have been required to maintain underwriting standards, but they simply didn't. So one of the critical pieces of what the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau at a federal level will be doing is to make sure that in terms of consumer credit, consumer lending, whether it's on your home or your credit card, that there are going to be standards in place so that people that we would tend to call consumers are being protected. And to give consumers a federal advocate where one has never existed, while consumer protection has been part of what many federal agencies should have been doing, it has never been their top priority. And because of that, it was more often a priority for them to be watching out and listening to what the banks wanted to perpetrate on all of us, as opposed to ensuring that the consumer protection was really being met.
So when you're saying that this, you know, could have been taken care of by any number of agencies that have that sort of protection as part of their duty, could that have happened? Was the problem that led to the financial situation a problem of a lot of agencies not doing their job, or something structurally that didn't work that this agency will do? And you know, what do you make of maybe criticism that this is just another layer of bureaucracy?
What I think is there needs to be a strong consumer protection advocate at the federal level. And so when I look and try to determine why did this happen, it was because we had federal regulators who just abdicated their responsibility to ensure that lenders in particular were doing their job. And then there's a whole other series of problems. So it's not just that the federal regulators, those people who were in charge of regulating the big banks, the big lenders, were refusing to tell them, no, you can't concoct these toxic mortgage products. These, we call them hybrid adjustable rate mortgages or pay option adjustable rate mortgages, which were really the worst of the worst products with prepayment penalties and whatnot. Instead of ever doing that, they basically let them create these products. People were making, and when I say people, I mean, you know, big banks, big lenders, making an enormous amount of money by putting people into these loans. As you know, these loans were being bundled. They were being sold off as securities on Wall Street. And essentially, your mortgage, which should provide you with a home and with financial security, really became something that there were investors gambling on. Yeah. And it crashed our economy eventually.
Who should run this new agency? Who should lead it? Your name has come up, in fact, as a possible candidate for that.
My belief is that Elizabeth Warren, who is just an extraordinary individual, law professor from Harvard, she should be the one who assumes the head of that agency. She was the person who had the initial idea to create a consumer financial protection agency, and she is somebody who very much understands that we cannot have another financial crisis like we are experiencing right now, because the impact that it has had on all hardworking individuals and families across America is just devastating.
Are you counting out the possibility of accepting if you're asked?
I'm very hopeful that Elizabeth Warren will be the one who was asked,
because she
would be great. Well, you know what? I take it as recognition of the work that we have done in Illinois and the impact that it has had nationally against the predatory lenders, in particular the mortgage giants, as well as the work that we've done on the back end and are continuing to do to help people who have ended up in foreclosure. Our settlement with Countrywide is incredibly significant. We sued them back in 2008 for their predatory lending practices. That settlement is estimated to be worth $8.7 billion, keep as many as 400,000 people in their homes across this country, and it was the first and, to the best of my knowledge, the only mandatory loan modification program in the country. And so we're very proud of that. It's gotten us a lot of national recognition. I have testified in front of Congress a number of times. But again, I would be very happy if Elizabeth Warren would assume that position.
But if they said, Lisa, could you do it, would you say yes or no?
I until I get asked the question, I don't have an answer. I haven't thought through it. I think Elizabeth would be great, is my commentary.
One other situation where your name has come up recently elsewhere is in the Blagojevich trial. There have been tapes played. His opinion of you and other politicians has been sort of laid on the table. What do you make of that? How does this whole controversy play into what the political situation in the state is right now, including an election season where you and a lot of other Democratic incumbents are trying to to hang on.
Well, it didn't surprise me at all to hear that Rod Blagojevich didn't like Lisa Madigan. We have never gotten along, and a long time ago, long before the 2006 election, I launched an investigation into his hiring practices that that we had heard and had reason to believe were inappropriate and potentially illegal. Eventually, we turned our investigation and information over to Patrick Fitzgerald's office that ultimately arrested and then indicted the governor. So it is not a surprise to me because we really never had a good relationship. We really never had a relationship when he was governor and I was the attorney general. I certainly think that for the state of Illinois, it has been devastating to the public trust to have our last two governors indicted. And there is an enormous amount of work that elected officials, good public servants, are going to have to do to rebuild the trust with the people of this state. So it's a shame that it has happened. I'm happy that these individuals are being brought to justice. But I think it makes a lot more work for those of us who look at it as a privilege and an opportunity to serve the people of this state.
At the same time, though, your name had been brought up in those tapes as a potential Senate candidate when that was brought up. How does that juxtapose with the negative comments that the governor had given to about you and other potential candidates for the Senate once that came up?
Well, I'm pretty sure that I learned last week, and I learned it in a funny way, that Blagojevich had said that if I was drowning, he wouldn't save me. And so I was in another part of the state, and I got a text message from my husband that said nothing more than, "I'd save you." I had to call him and say, "What?" And he said, apparently the former governor would be unwilling to save you if you were drowning. So I think that pretty much,
it's a roundabout
I think that pretty much
out.
Says it all okay. In terms of that situation.
You're running for re-election this year. What's beyond the next term as Attorney General?
Well, I'm very focused on the upcoming election in the fall, and I'm unwilling to take anything for granted. You know, the political atmosphere, not just in Illinois, but throughout the country, is very volatile right now. And so I'm going to run very hard. I hope that the people of the state of Illinois recognize the work that I've done and that the dedicated and committed lawyers and staff in the Attorney General's office have been doing for them. And we'll just have to see what the future holds after we get past that.
Do you serve a full 4-year term if you're elected?
That would obviously be my intent, yes.